gas production is key.
Don't you think that's more important cemetery than what we're laying here?
Still here, we gotta have some way to pay for it.
Where, do you have anything you wanna bring up on daycare centers?
I've got a lot of questions, I really do.
Okay, I'd like to.
You know, like, does it apply, I guess, well, I'll do these on the floor if you want.
Does it apply to who?
Well, we talked about state office building.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't even talk about what our office in Seattle or office in Tokyo. You know, the thing is not becoming so.
There are babies in Tokyo. The meeting will come to order, the Hills Committee, this is the time certain for taking out Senate Bill 247 relating to childcare centers and state office buildings. Senator Moss?
Mr. Chairman, since we've had previous testimony on this, I would move to pass the bill out as an individual recommendation.
Ready for the question? Those in favors, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
Opposed.
Senator Paul Fisher's opposed, the chair and Senator Moss vote aye, the bill is passed out with individual recommendations. Senator? So much for Senate Bill 247. What was the first item on that? Okay, House Bill 160 was on the calendar, that is off because the money for the aviation training has been placed in the budget. It's not necessary to act on House Bill 160, and I've talked to the sponsor in the House, Representative Hurlburt, who agrees that it's unnecessary to proceed with that. House Bill 160 relating to aviation. House Bill 39 relating to pregnant women. There is a committee substitute in the packet to comply with changes suggested at the last meeting. The committee substitute provides that all references to medical services are removed from the bill to comply with the intent not to cover alternatives to prenatal care. On page 2, there is a section providing that the Department of Health and Social Services will promulgate regulations for the act. This was designed to provide some provisions limiting entitlement, presumably based on need. And finally, the immediate effective date was removed since the department testified that it would need lead-in time to develop regulations before implementation of the program. Representative Mike Miller of Juneau, I'm informed, has seen the committee substitute and approves the changes. We also had a communication, which I just opened, from the Salvation Army Booth Memorial Home in Anchorage, asking that the bill be enacted. Are you ready for the question on that, Senator Bill?
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 30. I would move that we pass the bill out as individual recommendation.
The Senate Committee Substitute?
Committee Substitute.
Any objection? If not, SCS for Committee Substitute, House Bill 39 is reported out. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members?
Next item, House Bill 91, comes from the other body. It's an act relating to disclosure of vital statistics, records, and information, and providing for an effective date. Is that the next item for us? Why don't you explain your note to me?
The action that was taken in the judiciary, they added language in section 2 that says, other than historic and genealogical research, which precludes the use of disclosure for those purposes, and I'm not sure what happened. The intent of the bill was to allow the records to be disclosed after a certain time here for people to look for their rooms and to disclose their leases. And also the deleted language in section 3 means that birth certificates could not be issued for children born out of wedlock. 16% of the births in Alaska are for children, and they would have to go and get applied to a court in order to get the birth certificate released. They pointed out to me from vital statistics how difficult that would make permanent dividend program. Birth certificates of children have to be sent in.
The Department of Health and Social Services supports the original House Bill 91, but not the committee substitute, because of the change mentioned above. Representative Bob Bettesworth would also like the bill returned to its original form. And you have the original bill in front of you. A copy of the Model Act adopted in 1977 by the Council of State Governments is included. We have three witnesses to be heard. Is Patricia Lee here? From the Vital Statistics Office of the Department of Health and Social Services.
Okay, I was just informed that the in paragraph 5, that the interpretation by the department was different than what was given by the attorney. And so I can't testify on that other than the fact that
the attorney. Which attorney are you referring
to? I'm
the drafting attorney. There's confusion over the language in section 2.
Two.
The other than genealogical research. And I did call the attorney and he said, yes, it does preclude release of information for those purposes, which I don't think was the intent.
Okay. And of course, the section relating to or as provided by regulation, we recommend that that not be in the bill, since it does stop children from born out of wedlock from getting certificates unless by on order of superior court.
In other words, the House bill, as amended, drops that out. You'd like that retained so that you could provide for regulations for the illegitimate child to get his or her records, right? Okay.
And the Bureau has no problem with the disclosure of records after 50 and 100 years. This would be legislation similar to that taken of other states, which has worked very effectively.
And the Bureau of Vital Statistics had a position paper on the original bill saying that by making public birth records after 100 years and death, marriage, and divorce records after 50 years, it will satisfy the need expressed by many who desire to research their roots. Because of the model law, many states have enacted this provision with success, because those vital records relating to the living and next of kin are still primarily protected. Passage of HB 91 would make public about 33,000 of the 675,000 records in the custody of the State Registrar of Vital Statistics. It is acknowledged that care must be exercised in providing a place for the public review of these records, while assuring the continuing safekeeping of the documents. Existing staff can monitor the record review. And so then that was your position. And then on the committee substitute, at one point you said that the words, your office said that the words other than genealogical or historical research was helpful in clarification.
Okay, the Bureau.
I think that what was meant was for research purposes for genealogical or historical research rather than other than. Probably, that's probably the error.
the Bureau interpreted that would be research for medical
history
or agencies that come in looking for information, for looking for particular trends, that sort of thing.
Okay, your position paper says that we understand on the regulatory change that could add 1,650 petitions to be filed in the court. Assuming, though, that's assuming that everybody wanted to go through this process and cared about getting information. Most people probably wouldn't bother.
But eventually somebody is going to need their birth certificate, and this kind of locks it out. That we cannot issue it unless
they go through the court.
Unless they go through the court.
Okay, and taking back to Section 2 again, do you now favor or oppose the House language adding other than genealogical or historical research?
Well, if it precludes it, we would oppose it, I'm sure. Meaning taking it out so that it's not available to the genealogist.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions?
Just one. Are you satisfied with the way it is now?
No, sir.
So, I mean, as an existing law right now.
Oh, as an existing law?
As it is right now. Do you see any need at all for us to at this time, even forward the disclosure of vital statistics?
The Bureau has been working with each genealogist, but not being on the side of the genealogist, it's working for the Bureau.
Just
the way it is now.
If we didn't have a language other than, if we didn't limit it to genealogical or historical or medical research, how would we know that Joe Smith, who's not nosy about my kid's birth, or just doesn't show up and say I'm a researcher and I want to get access to Peter Josephson's file? How does the clerk deal with that? I'm a researcher. Here's my student card from the University of Alaska Juneau. Part of my assignment.
The state registrar reviews each request for research, and generally she will do that with regard to who is doing the research. Generally, if it's a state agency within the department or within another department, and it's generally non-identifying information. All records prior to 100 years are confidential, and they will not be revealed to anybody unless...
Prior. Yeah, you mean subsequent to 100 years.
Right.
More recently. But if the bill passed, as the House passed it, the bill became law, Section 310F provides that the records become public records, the 50 and 100 years later. Section 310B would give the Bureau discretion to release the data to a researcher, right?
Right.
Okay.
The way we interpreted it was strictly for trends or statistical data.
But what if Section B, subsection B, 310B, was not in the bill at all? We just made it.
It's currently in the law that would accessibly
under the genealogical. Yes, we just dropped it out of the bill. Kept present law there. I don't understand. What did the House think it was doing?
I think they thought that
they
were.
Nothing. It's just provided by the section or is authorized by regulation. They're limiting it. Nothing they don't limit the regulation.
No, but what they did was they said the Bureau may permit the use of data contained in vital statistics records for research purposes other than genealogical or historical research.
Well, yeah, but the first part doesn't make any sense either.
Huh?
First part doesn't make any sense either.
Huh?
It was for medical. It's for medical or cancer studies, heart fund.
So what they did was, you now permit historians and genealogists on a case-by-case basis to get access to records?
No, sir.
Under the law as presently written?
No, sir.
You don't do that? That's
no.
You're supposed to.
No.
But the present law says the Bureau may permit the use of data in the records for research purposes.
Okay, that's dealing strictly with medical-type research. Research for genealogy and that is done by the Bureau for any genealogist who comes in. They are not allowed to come in and thumb through the records.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe our problem is we don't have the whole statute in front of us.
That's possible. I'm not sure that I have it with me either.
Okay. I suppose so. All right. Is Mr. Viano here?
Yes.
Do you want to speak to this?
Yes. My name is R.N. DeArmond. I've been a resident of Alaska for a little more than 70 years, and I've been doing historical research for a little more than 50 years. My main concern was with this exclusion of genealogists in historical research, but apparently you're of a mind to take care of that. At present, for clarification, I get records, copies of mostly death certificates from the Bureau all the time. I don't go thumbing through the records, but I go in and ask for a certain person's death certificate and give the approximate date, and I get it. So there's no problem now with my getting it for historical research. Before they release it, they stamp on it with a rubber stamp for historical or genealogical research. But from then on, I have that record. It's been suggested that there's a possibility that some people object in death records of having the medical information released. That could be readily taken care of. It's a very small section on the certificate of death. Before Xeroxing it, they could cover that so it was not disclosed. As an historian, I have no need of medical records. For the other addition here, Section F, I have some objection to that long a term for both death and marriage records. I very seldom have occasion to get a birth record, but I might point out that our vital statistics system didn't start until the first state or territorial legislature in 1913. Prior to that time, if someone wanted to register a birth or a marriage or thing else, I went to the local recorder and it went right in with the mining records. And from 100 years would take it back to 1883. From then till 1913, those records are available to anybody who wants to walk into the recorder's office in the district. Any kind of a record. They're mixed in with the placer claims and the water rights and the mortgages and deeds, but they're there.
Well, I suppose the glory of 100 years is that is more than the...
than the person. Yeah. Maybe there's some good reason. Is anybody being hurt by the present system? I haven't heard any great public outcry to change it. And I have the same service from other states. In fact, I have inquiries now to the state of Washington for the birth date of the first woman attorney in Alaska, Mrs. Gilman, who was admitted to the bar here in 1910. We don't have any record of when she was born. I did find out recently when she died, so I can get that record. But I've never been denied one from any of the probably 15 or 20 states to whom I've applied. I'm not sure, and I don't have the statistical information. Maybe they were all more than 50 years. I'm not sure.
Okay. So do you know why the House tried to limit you as an historian?
I don't. No, that baffles me. That baffles me.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
I'm a little different. I'll kind of let look at it.
This bill?
It's a long bill.
Yeah, Kit Stewart. I've never met a genealogist before, so this is very exciting.
I'm a weird animal. I'm also amateur historian. I can tell you why medical information is good on death records sometimes, because I have been able to trace cancer of the jaw back to one of my ancestors who died in 1835. It has appeared in my family every other generation since then, which we never would have known if I hadn't have been able to get the cause of deaths in several cases. There is one member of my family now that is undergoing a series of surgeries for cancer of the jaw. He never had any idea that it was hereditary at all, but those frequencies are much higher than chance. Can't say it's hereditary, but it's higher than chance. That's just an aside. I am in favor of releasing the information specifically to genealogists if possible, because about three, I'm not sure, maybe 4 years ago, I started in this genealogical business. I went down to Vital Statistics and said, I am a genealogist. I wish to do professional research for hire. What is required for me to access your records? They told me that the only way I could access a specific record was to get a letter of authorization from the descendant of the person the record was for, appointing me their personal representative and authorizing the release of the information to me, and that they would not do it for anybody more distant than a grandchild. That's what I was told then. And so I've been operating under that assumption ever since by not doing it, but telling people to go right to them themselves. I lose money on it. Besides...
Well, I'm, you're in favor of what?
I'm in favor of opening those records up to genealogists, not excluding them.
The existing law says that the Bureau can make the data available to the research.
But they don't consider genealogists researchers.
So you would like to say including genealogical and historical research.
Right.
Instead of other
things. They consider research medical research.
I see.
And that's the only interpretation.
But you would still have to get authorization, wouldn't you, from the person?
Now, if they're willing to pay me to go down and do this sort of stuff, I can go down there, do it, send them a bill, one letter, takes me an hour maybe, I only charge them $8. If I have to sit down and write a letter back, get them to do an authorization back for me, and then carry it down there, it's not worth it.
Yeah, but on the other hand, suppose... suppose the National Enquirer wanted to, under the guise of genealogical research, find an Alaskan's line for the last 80 years and just contacted the Bureau and said, I'm a genealogist. I mean, should we permit that?
They do it everywhere else. I have, like I said in my letter there, I've gotten things from 1735 to 1978 with no questions asked from other states. The only time I ever had to even say I was related to this person was to get a 1910 census before they were released.
So you say our laws are much more restrictive?
Oh, much more. It's the only state or state or province I know of that I can't access the material.
Now, Senator Halford points out that there's a right of privacy in the state of Alaska Constitution, which may not be, which isn't in most states.
That's true.
Okay. Any questions, sir? Thank you.
I got one point that even if you did take the health and the House bill, sounds like a double bind because it says that it will be in accordance with Section 0925.120, and Section 0925.120 says that public records can be released except for records of vital statistics and refers you back to 1850-80 defines vital statistics, meaning records of birth, death, etc., which sounds like that even if you pass the House's original bill, they still couldn't release them as public records.
Well, the House didn't do anything.
Okay. You'd have to change 0925-120 also. Thank you.
Well, I'm just wondering... And the same defect may appear in Representative Bedesworth's original. I don't think we're in shape on this matter yet, so that seems to be the consensus. Let's check out check this out with the draftsman as to why Title IX is referenced here, and let us find out from Mr. Bussell's staff what the rationale for doing it this way was, and maybe ask if Mr. Bettesworth would like to come before us. Okay? We'll do it soon. Thank you very much for coming.
There'll be another hearing scheduled.
Yeah, you could notify these people. We'll notify you.
Phone number on.
Yeah, okay.
Thank Appreciate
you.
It.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we now come to the matter of collective bargaining. And
chair.
The committee asked representatives from school boards and the teachers association to sit down and see if they could come to any common ground. Essentially, they could not come to any common ground. I had a committee substitute drafted, which I will explain. Essentially, there are two situations in which I think a last best offer was called for. One was at the mediation stage, and then if mediation broke down in the arbitration stage, and it would be a package where the arbitrator would accept the last best offer of one party or the other without modification and issue a binding decision. Obviously, the argument for the last best offer concept is that it tends to bring the parties together because in theory, the more unreasonable party will be left behind and the arbitrator will take the package offered by the more reasonable party. One critique that I have received on that from a member of the administration was that is a good theory and works if the arbitrator is sophisticated. If the arbitrator is unsophisticated, you could have a disaster. So that's a policy question for the legislature to look at it. If you see the notes on the committee substitute as compared to the original bill, the first five pages have no changes. At page 6 in section 8, on lines 3 and 4, the phrase last best offer is inserted where it did not appear before. A school board, after public hearing, shall by written resolution decide whether last best offer mediated arbitration or the right to strike. The options of the school board are either for allowing a strike or by accepting mediated arbitration.
What's the time frame there?
Well, the first
and it, they
also must do this after a public hearing, which is a new material. That is, the school board makes this decision. In section 13, at page 11, an existing school board shall make the local option decision between last best offer mediated arbitration or the right to strike within 90 days after the effective date of this act. However, we were going to permit that to be modified from time to time. There's the language that said they could change their election, but not during not within the last 6 months of the start of the contract.
There is language in here that says that there's an official contract or assistance that won't take effect.
Okay, it should be there. They can modify the decision. But they wouldn't, we don't contemplate here that they would be making this choice during a controversy. In that respect, of course, that's different from the administration's proposal. We limited the so-called limited strike option on page 6, lines 12 and 13. The page on line 5, the original language was whether arbitration or strike shall follow. And we say the right to strike because that's the real decision they make. The decision of whether to exercise the right is the union's. And then at page 7, B is new, and it describes the process for the last best offer mediated arbitration and says, in last best offer mediated arbitration under this section, each party shall submit a final offer on all issues in dispute. Each party shall submit to the arbitrator oral or written evidence in support of its position and shall be given an opportunity to respond to the presentation of evidence by the other party. The arbitrator may propose compromises to points in dispute. That's the mediation aspect. At the request of either party or on the motion of the arbitrator may conduct a public hearing for the purpose of allowing the parties to present and explain their positions and final offers. The arbitrator shall allow each party to revise its last best offer before final submission to the arbitrator for decision. And what this represents is not just one offer, but an opportunity after you've heard the other side and had perhaps some public reaction to amend your offer and then submit it. It does not provide for succession of offers because that works against finality of the process, but it allows modification of the original offer. And section C on page 8 is the same. Section D says that the arbitrator shall, without modification, adopt the last best offer of one of the parties and issue a final and binding decision not more than 10 days after the parties have presented their last best offer. This process assures real finality in the dispute. The governor's process didn't, because it just simply could lead to a strike and let the thing dissolve from there. Then, the enforcement of the award is very similar to what happened under other arbitrations under the Arbitration Act. That is, the court will confirm the award, but could vacate the award if there was fraud or corruption or misconduct. And the grounds are very parallel, if not identical. Those are the only substantive changes. On page 13, last best offer and right to strike language is used in section 13, I mean, to conform to the other provisions we've gone over. Nancy, how does the agency relate to this arbitration thing? I'm not quite clear about where the five people come in and where the arbitrator comes in.
I understand that there's a negotiating team.
And they enforce the thing from the standpoint of they enforce the Unfair Labor Practices Act.
They enforce the process, right?
Okay.
Provide a name of
the ones who talk to the school board, and they are the group that picks the arbitrator today.
Did you want to say anything to us?
Unless there's questions.
Pardon?
Unless there's questions.
This is going for the referral.
Sorry.
Is there a fish one on?
We don't have a fish one on this particular case.
We have fish one on the original.
The original one, and then we added this one under the governor's bill, which was zero.
Why would this deal be costly if the governor's bill is not here?
I have no idea. I haven't.
There is an increase in the negotiation that
this agency.
Yeah. Educational employee liberation. Policy decisions were adding non-certificated employees in the entire process. Page 2 of the Educational Employee Labor Relations Agency shall decide each case, and this is with regard to negotiating it, and give the full 3 months, and it's appropriate for the purpose of negotiating based on the fact that such a community will persuade you that another one of the pictures of color in the office of negotiations. Page 2. But then we go on to D, provides an election.
Right.
So it's going to be decided by election, and what does it mean? Such factors as community interest, wages, hours, and other working conditions,
because
employees involved in history negotiating.
Yeah.
It should just say, you do it appropriate for the purpose of negotiation based on the desires of the employees. So that's not going to be finally expressed in the election.
Because I think the way this works in the National Labor Relations Board practice is that you get cards from 25% of the people, and you send those cards to the National Labor Relations Board and you say you want an election, a representation election. And the board decides whether you have an appropriate unit or not. And that is where the criteria here would be. For example, I suppose you could have a situation where you might have.
So this says upon petition for certification by 25%.
Yeah. In a proposed unit.
Well, and if is the question. That's the Educational Employees Labor Relations Agency. Has reasonable cause to believe that a question of representation exists. Okay, you're saying that if you don't have the open language in the previous section, then they don't have the ability to decide yes or no under this and if.
Sure.
So 25% of the people can't force an election.
Well, they can force an election if the unit is appropriate, but you could have a situation. I know you can often have a situation in other kinds of labor where the employer says it's not an appropriate unit. I don't know whether that would be 25% of the elementary school teachers or 25% of the junior high school teachers petition want a different form of election instead of having the whole unit, or combinations of districts possibly. And the REAs come forward, I suppose.
Okay, we're satisfied.
I don't think that's a problem.
Okay, on page 4, notwithstanding 44, 62, 310, negotiated leave that they have an executive session upon which they'll be in both parties. Negotiating meeting from the open meeting floor.
Those are pretty much because of the idea that they affect the finances of the local government unit. In local government experience, I have had negotiating meetings in that place.
Provisions of executive session.
Yes, so they can go to executive session under existing law if they wanted to. This says they don't even have to do that. Just says they're automatically exempt to agree. Because
I'm not sure that's necessary, but I didn't like that.
I don't think the policy.
Because Governor Shepherd's on.
If they have a local option election, be adopted before the remediation process begins.
Well, we wanted some language that said that could be done, I said, from time to time. That's a problem.
It says a resolution adopted in accordance with section binding on calendar law group. So it seems to be saying it's not binding.
Yeah, for the next go round. Again, this was a policy, you understand, this is a policy question between those who felt that the school board should be able to make this decision in the midst of a controversy, and those who felt that it should not be. That the employee, the education employee's labor relations agency sets the procedures for conducting the election. I'd like to ask Gene. Gene, on page 10, and maybe Bob wants to comment about this. This is about the right of non-association of employees having bona fide religious convictions. Okay. There's a broader right than that now, isn't there?
There's, excuse me?
A broader right of non-association. Now, isn't it?
Not under Title 14. Title 14 doesn't speak to non-association employees.
Wendy, I'm confused. I understood that there are in the district in Anchorage, for example, there are many non-associated teachers. Mm-hmm. They're not all claims of religious conviction, are they?
Correct. But under Title 14, there is no explicit provision for an agency fee, and there is with this language, and so this is a protective language for those people who pay a fee for the agency but have some religious convictions that are opposed to any kind of an association.
Okay.
Other than religious.